Okay, welcome to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is April 27th, 2017, and we've got two items on the agenda for today. The first, we'll start off with a work session on HB 2906 relating to the sharing of geographic information, and which will be followed by a public hearing. So before we begin with the work session, let's go to staff.
You bet. Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee. As you know, we've had two public hearings on House Bill 2906 that have been held before this committee. The first, with invited testimony, was on April 4th, and the second was with public testimony was on April 10th. We have posted a variety of materials related to this bill on OLIS, including the bill itself, the Dash 5 recommended amendment, the LFO recommendation for the measure, the preliminary staff measure summary, and the fiscal impact statement. We did hear from Legislative Revenue Office that they have confirmed that this bill does not have a revenue impact. At the discretion of the chair and the members, and in the interest of time, as I have read through a full overview of this bill twice now, I'd like to focus on the Dash 5 amendment. If that pleases the chair. Great. The Dash 5 amendment was developed in collaboration with the Geospatial Data Sharing Work Group that has been working for the last year or so, and stakeholders in the Portland area. The Dash 5 amendment improves the readability and understanding of certain provisions within the measure. It adds a city or county GIS manager to the list of Oregon Geographic Information Council members. It explicitly includes a representative from a natural resource agency as a potential council member. It includes term of office language for the council chair and vice chair positions. It reinforces the need for the council and for public bodies that have access to the data that is housed within Oregon's spatial data library to make known and honor legitimate restrictions that are placed on sharing or redistribution of shared data based on exemptions from public disclosure or various claims of copyright or other proprietary interests. And lastly, the Dash 5 amendment removes the emergency clause and includes an effective date for the measure, which will be 91 days following sine die of the 2017 legislative session. Additionally, we did get a request just yesterday. The co-chairs were made aware of this from the Secretary of State. They asked that we verbally clarify on the record, which I'm doing now, that House Bill 2906 does not require the sharing of any personally identifiable information for minors who are pre-registered to vote or crime victims in law enforcement in the address confidentiality program. Apparently they have a specific program to that effect. LFO does recommend the Dash 5 amendment. So we would need a motion from a committee member to adopt the Dash 5 amendment to House Bill 2906.
May I ask a question? And with apologies, Mr. Chair, walking across the hall is a dangerous thing to do. Why the reinstatement of the emergency clause?
Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, we're actually, we're removing the emergency clause.
And
we're instead including an effective date that would be 91 days.
Thank you. I've gotten very grumpy about abuses of the emergency clause, so I didn't understand why my colleague was winking at me about it, and it's coming off. That's a good thing.
Senator Johnson, I've heard a rumor it might be because of that that we have removed that particular clause.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Can I help you with some motions?
Yeah.
All right. So, Mr. Chair, are you ready to receive motions?
Yes.
I would move the adoption of the Dash 5 amendment to House Bill 2906.
Senator Johnson has motioned to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2906. Questions? Are there any discussions? Any objections?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2906 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Johnson has moved House Bill 2906 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendations. Discussions?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So I think this is a good bill, and I just want to thank Mr. McSpadden for his work on this bill. It's been more than one session's worth of work on this, so it's a lot of work. I think it's a good bill, and I'll be looking forward to the product from the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments, any other discussion? No further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would volunteer to take this unless somebody wants to arm wrestle me for it. I would volunteer to take it to full and to the Senate floor.
Senator Johnson, nobody's going to arm wrestle you. You got it. Now, all we need is a volunteer from the, Representative Nearman. Thank you. And we will close the work session on HB House Bill 2906. And we will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 5534, Public Employees Retirement System. And staff, could you give us an overview, please?
Mr. Chair, would you allow me to disrupt the flow of the meeting just briefly? We have two young people here that I presume are here by virtue of Follow Your Parents to Work Day. And would it be all right if they introduced themselves and were welcomed by the committee?
Please do. Please come forward.
Or just from where they're sitting.
Oh, no, I want them to come forward. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We're not trying to embarrass you, gentlemen. This is your capital, and this is your legislature, and we just want to know where you're from and what grade you are and if you're having a good time today.
Okay. My name is Nathan Rolfing. I'm in the eighth grade, and I've been following my dad to work, obviously, and I've been having a really fun time.
Good, thank you.
My name is Peter Kroll. I've been following my dad, and I've been having a really fun time.
Well, Nathan and Peter, welcome to the Capitol. And as you can see, if you have any testimony on PERS, feel free to chime in right now. I'm going to take that as no. Well, thank you, and enjoy your time here. And we do appreciate you being here. I love it when students come and visit the Capitol. It's very important. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So we'll continue on, and John?
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, before you is the Public Employees Retirement System. This is part of their, on the agency side of the operations, they're in their phase two hearing. They will discuss some security information issues, some of their policy packages, some post-governor's recommended budget adjustments, and some potential fiscals with substantive legislation. And the agency is here to make their presentation, Mr. Co-Chair.
Okay. We have Mr. Rodman.
Oh, and if I may, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Cummings of our office, the information technology analyst for the Legislative Fiscal Office, is here, also as a resource for the subcommittee.
Thank you. Welcome again. It seemed like you are a frequent flyer here, or visitor, so we're always excited to see you, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, Co-Chair Manning and members of the committee, to give you some more background and information on the PERS agency request budget. Linnea, did you want to introduce yourself?
Linnea Whittakin with DAS CFO.
So, waiting for the presentation to come up, but I know it's up on OLIS as well. A lot to cover, so I'm going to fly at a pretty high level. If you have detailed questions or want me to dive any further down, please let me know. I want to start with a discussion about agency reorganization. I took over the position of executive director in November of 2014, so it's been a little over 2 years. And after settling into the position, one of the first things that we tackled was our agency structure and how we do the work that we do. So we tried to take a principled approach to that. It's one of those things where the agency structure had evolved over time, but nobody had stepped back and thought about, is this the right way to set up the operation? So we followed a principled or set some principles for that. Organizational structure, dealing with partnerships, process, communication, authority, and accountability.
Mr. Rodman, one of the things that's been brought to my attention, could you please state your name for the record?
Sorry, Steve Rogman, Executive Director of PERS.
Thank you.
You were so welcoming, Co-Chair Manning, I just figured I'd launch right into it. I apologize for that. So anyway, some principles that we followed: partnerships to engage better with our members and employers, process to make sure we promote innovation, simplicity, Communication is always a key of setting clear expectations and consistent information, and most importantly, authority and accountability to make sure that we knew who was had responsibility for different parts of the work that we do. So this is what the chart used to look like, and you can see there's a lot of boxes there, of course, headed by the PERS board director, and then the deputy director position, which I was in prior to becoming a director. Audits was stuck off to the side, and then we had the various divisions underneath. And just to illustrate one of the conundrums, we had a benefit payments division and a customer service division, and people in benefit payments were responsible for customer service, and people in customer service paid benefits. So we hadn't really principally aligned the work that we did. And so the change is to this revised chart. What I've done is move, or suggested that we would do, is move the deputy director position to directly over operations and make sure that that deputy director concentrates on keeping the doors open, the work going, and making sure that members' services stay at the top of the work that we do.
Could I just ask right now, I assume that by the very fact that the legislature has taken up questions around PERS, that your agency is probably overwhelmed. Where are those calls being handled right now, and what level of staff reassignment have you engaged in to make sure that your members are cared for in what is for many of them a very anxious time?
Co-Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, thank you for the question. That's one of the reasons why we centralized operations in the box that we do here, because then it becomes one person's accountability to make sure that all the resources available are brought to bear on that. To answer your specific question, it's a challenge because of the high demand. It absolutely is. And we are really cautious about who we get answering phone calls, because you want to make sure they know what they're talking about. So our drive is more to make sure the right that we have as many competent people as we can answering the calls rather than bodies to just make sure that the phones stop ringing, which limits our ability, of course, to staff up, as it were. But what we have done is schedule additional one-on-one meetings for our members, increased our availability for that, brought back people in temporary work who have been in those positions previously but retired, and also made sure that we keep in close conversation and cooperation with our phone staff on developments in the legislature, and so that they have the most current information to provide members when they do call. So we've made every effort we can to expand our capacity and capabilities, keeping in mind how responsible we must be in making sure the right people are answering those
Thank
calls.
Thank you.
Just a quick little follow-up on that then. What is the retention cycle of people? Are you having a large turnover? Is that contributing to some of the issues? You had mentioned have knowledgeable people. But if there is a continuous turnover, rate of turnover, then you lose a lot of that and cause you to retrain a lot and, you know, increase costs.
Co-Chair Manning, thank you. We don't have inordinate turnover. In other words, these phone positions are not something that is kind of it's not a temporary position. When you come in as a phone counselor, we hire people that want to be in a call center. We hire people that want to be on the phones. This is the job that they to which they aspire. Now, a lot of them are. Once they get in and learn the system, move on to other parts of the agency. And so we have some escalation, if you will, or promotion out of the call center, but we don't have a churn where we get people in and get people out. When they move out, they generally move on to other opportunities within the agency. And then that complicates the feeder because, of course, you can't just have somebody walk in on their first day and say, there's the phone, when it rings, pick it up. There's a 3 or 4 month process before we even let their voice match up with a member, just to make sure they are well competent in what they can do.
Thank you. Representative Marsh.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair. So I'm going to ask you a question that we've asked a lot of the other departments, which is that do you have a calculation of your current personnel, how many are within retirement age?
Co-Chair Manning, Representative Marsh, we do. We're somewhere in the upper 30s, low 40% range. And I only smile because the other agencies you've asked that question, they come to us for the answer. So
you know the question is being asked. Follow up. So are, and this is a little bit of a off topic to where we are, but are you considering any strategies for reinforcing your personnel when those retirements start to happen?
Co-Chair Manning, Representative Marsh, absolutely.
This restructuring relevant to that?
So why this restructuring is relevant to that and all the other organizational decisions we make is because of clarity. Clarity around responsibilities, clarity around authority, clarity around accountability. So that is going back to the principles that drove this. Like I say, accountability and authority is a driver of that. What I mean by that then, of course, is when someone retires out of a position, of course, you ask yourself the first question, which is, can we do better with this function? Can it be replaced? Can it be replaced? Must it be replaced? Could it be done more efficiently or effectively? And if you answer that or come out of that with, here's the kind of work we need done and the skill set that we need to fill it, clarity around authority and accountability helps you make the decision of the best way to get there. So the other point I'll emphasize is just how many fewer boxes there are in this chart than that chart. Mm-hmm. And that's only to, again, point out a couple of the theories or strategies that we used. One is, of course, eliminating that middle layer between the administrators and the director. I used to be as deputy director in the middle, having all the administrators report to me and then reporting to the director. And that was great for me as a succession plan. But as I say, I'm only 2 years into this job, so I'm not really thinking about how am I grooming the next person to take my job. I still want to have the operations and administration and IT folks reporting directly to me, so I keep my hands on the operations. And so I moved that deputy director position over to focusing solely on operations. The other thing I did was create something that's kind of unique, I think, and that is the box on the right about compliance, audit, and risk. As I say in the prior slide, audit just sits out there in the place that often sits in organizational charts with a connection to the director, but we have an audit committee that really directs what the auditors do, and these are some of the most these are the people in our agency who can hold people accountable for what they're doing by standards that are directed by their audit professional conduct. It's also the kind of people you can bring in as a third party to look at your process, look at your operations, and see, is there a better way that we can do this? So we're trying to integrate audits into really the bigger picture, which is compliance. There are a number of laws we have to follow at the state and federal level. Are we doing that correctly? Audit, are we applying those laws consistently, and are the it's not just a financial audit, it's a performance audit, it's a process audit, it's are we operating as effectively as we can? And then, of course, risk. Are we taking appropriate risks? Do we know the risks we're taking? Are the strategies to mitigate or resolve those risks appropriate? So that's a function I think that most state agencies don't have. I would also posit, though, that most state agencies don't have the financial responsibility that we do as the second largest budget in the state. So that is why I wanted to concentrate on the compliance aspect and the risk aspect of what we do. I won't quote John Borden out of context, but he said at one point, you can have as many auditors as you need, because he understands the need for the audit arm in the work that we do. So that revised organizational chart was acknowledged by Chief Financial Office and Legislative Fiscal last summer. The next question then was, how do we properly classify and compensate the people in those positions? The direction of DAS's Chief Human Resource Office was to start with the director position. So I went through that review, and that resulted in an increase of my classification from an H to an I, which is one step below the top classification in a series PEM, or what they call a principal executive managers. So with that I classification, now we're going through the next level review, which is what's the right classification level for those chief administration, technology, compliance, risk, and operations folks that you saw. And that permanent financing package, we hope to be submitted for review within this biennium. So fewer bodies, better alignment and accountability and responsibility, higher classification because we expect more out of those folks. That's the bottom line on these organizational changes. If there aren't any questions on that, I'll move to a discussion about information security.
Okay, LFO.
Mr. Co-Chair, I just wanted to make the subcommittee aware of something. There is a statute that requires reporting by agencies when they make substantive program type changes. So during the interim, we alerted PERS that this triggered that statute. They made the appropriate report to DAS, and then that report was passed on to leadership. And so I just want to make you aware that it's, while agencies have a lot of authority to make programmatic changes, they also need to inform the legislature. These would include establishing any new programs, eliminating an existing program, delaying a program, changing the operations and finance of a program, obviously these type of reorganizations. So that's the mechanism, one mechanism by which the legislature is informed of activities of the executive branch that are of import. Otherwise, this really should have happened during the legislative session where they formally come before the legislature with a report on such a reorganization change. So just a little background, if I, Mr. Co-Chair and members.
Just to make sure that there's no ambiguity in your comments, Mr. Borden, PERS did everything they were supposed to do.
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, ideally this reorg was identified during the 15 session, and under perfect circumstances they would have reported then. But I think the reorg matured right after the close of the 15 session, and then they followed the proper protocol by reporting.
Thank you.
And Co-Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, if I may, John is being kind in his description. It was our failure to follow that process that he just described was out of my lack of familiarity with that being the thing to do. So John let us follow on afterwards, and CFO as well. So we're a little behind probably the process we should have followed, but we're now caught up. And thanks to the grace of LFO staff for letting us do that. So the next area is information security. This is a huge priority for us at PERS because we are a target-rich environment. I know a lot of information about all of you and everyone in public employment. I know where you work. I know what you make. I know who your family is. I know your Social Security number. I know how long you've worked where. I know where you, if you're getting money from us, I know where you bank.
If he gets to wait, I would like to be noted as a budget on his budget as a no.
Moving right along. So always been a core operating principle of our agency. Back in December of 2015, we commissioned our most recent information security assessment. What we did was hire an outside third party to assess our information security practices and protections. And this is much more broad. This effort is much more broad than just Russian hackers in a basement. Information security is really a cultural requirement, a cultural discipline that has to be instituted in any organization. And some 90% of the information security incidences are because of personal conduct. In other words, it isn't the Russian hacker I need to worry as much about as I do the person in my phone center who says, sure, I can help you with that. And they don't understand that they're talking to the wrong person or someone who they should not be providing that information to. Or, somebody in my office who gets the email and says, click here, and they do. And that brings somebody into our organization who should not be there. So my point is just that information security is not just a firewall. It's not just putting up a barrier. It really is something institutional for us. So this assessment that was done by Anishin, that was the firm, back in December of 2015, pointed out a number of areas that we needed to improve. Their lowest concern was on the technology. They gave us top marks for penetration testing and the barriers that we had. It was really more around the physical security of the building and the social aspect of our information security practices. So we were going to embark on the remediation efforts in that regard when in 2016 this legislation this legislature adopted Senate Bill 1538, by which we were directed to provide that assessment to the state's Chief Information Security Office and LFO. And once they saw that assessment, they came in April of 2016 with a memo to us that said, here are 16 things that we want you to accomplish in the area of information security and do it by the end of the biennium.
With your permission, perhaps Mr. Borden can refresh us a little bit about what was the impetus behind Senate Bill 1538. God has mercifully stricken the details from my mind, and perhaps you could refresh us.
Mr. Co-Chair and Senator Johnson, I'm not the expert on that, but I can give you just the broad policy overview, and maybe Bob could weigh in, or Mr. Cummings. The one impetus behind that was that agencies were undergoing security assessments, like this particular example, but did not have to share those with oversight, such as the Office of the State, CIO, or Legislative Fiscal. And so this is a clear example of if those had been shared before, and agencies may have a history of not having good performance on these audits, that no one would have known, and they would have been kept internal to the agency. So this is an example where there was grave concern with the audit findings, and so that sparked action on the part of not only CIO, Governor's Office, and LFO to ask the agency to immediately cease on certain projects and begin focusing on these 16 core elements to resolve those security issues. But Senator, I can get you more information, and again, maybe Mr. Cummings has.
I'd welcome a comment from Mr. Cummings, but you've given me what I needed for today's purposes. Oh. This is where you talk.
Or not. Chair Manning, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Cummings. I'm with LFO. John's done an excellent job of describing the purpose of that, and it was that very often we're finding out about security breaches and stuff from the newspapers instead of from the agencies. Also, we were not aware of security assessments and results and stuff that were being done. So within the legislature, we did not know that there were major security issues out there being worked on or not being worked on because they were kept internally with the agencies. So the 1538 was put into place to require executive branch agencies to provide the legislature with information throughout the year on security issues and things of that nature. And it was one of the drivers that brought, we would have normally not have known about the PERS assessment that was, security assessment was being done. 1538 required that to be shared with us and with USCIO for that matter. So the bill probably has more in it that I'm not aware of, but that's the gist.
Thank you.
So as a result of the direction from the state CIO and LFO, we were putting together a plan and did put together a plan to accomplish those remediation efforts within this biennium. We were helped with the services of HP Enterprises, which has now changed their name again recently, but they were contracted over the summer to come in and help us put together a plan, which they are just wrapping up their engagement with us to help us with the assessment and the planning. And in the midst of all that work that we were doing with HP Enterprises, the governor issued an executive order in September of 2016, Executive Order 16-13, which sought to centralize information security in the Office of the State CIO. So since that, once, of course, that executive order was issued, we tried and were successful, of course, in engaging the state CIO's office in their guidance in how we should respond to the executive order in light of the fact that we were well into our remediation efforts. And the direction from the state CIO's office was to proceed as planned, that we were ahead of the curve in the work that we were doing in assessment and remediation, and to stay ahead of that curve with the work we were doing with HPE. So
I want to make sure I understand what you just said, that the direction from the CIO was your work with HP is good work and you're ahead of the curve and stay the course with HP.
Correct.
Okay. Colleagues, I'll tell you what I'm beginning to draw down on is the performance that occurred here yesterday. Was it yesterday or Wednesday? Wednesday.
I think it was Tuesday, because I was here Wednesday.
Time flies when you're having fun. It was Tuesday. When we had the CEO or the CIO come and explain to us a failed phone system, and one of the weakest explanations that I had heard in quite a while about some of the problems that were antecedent to that failure. And as I opined yesterday from information that I'm now getting, it's worse than it seemed. And so I just want to plant a flag on the fact that I don't have a giant amount of confidence in the state CIO office right now. And given the incredibly data-sensitive, well, data-voluminous and then sensitive data that is at PERS, I think that we would be well as a legislature to take a serious look at the executive order and say, are we well served by a state CIO office that struggles to report to the governor, can't get agencies to do what they want? PERS has already taken a very thoughtful self-assessment and by the state CIO's own acknowledgement was ahead of the wave. And I think that this is something, Mr. Chair, that I would respectfully suggest to you and the other co-chair that you very seriously review, and maybe we offer a little legislative pushback. I don't know how the rest of you felt, but I thought that the CIO's explanation of that failed phone system was dreadful. And it is no small amount of concern that if we suddenly begin forcing PERS to fit a PERS peg into whatever shape hole the CIO wants, much less tries to force them into the data center, and I'm a well-known critic of the data center, I really am quite anxious about what the outcome is going to be. And I know, Mr. Rodman, I'm trying to take you someplace that as a good executive branch guy, you don't want to go. I'm just suggesting to my colleagues that I think this would benefit from some very careful review.
I agree. So we'll coordinate with Co-Chair Smith and get with you, John, so we can kind of form some strategy moving forward. And I certainly would like to have the advice and inclusion of Senator Johnson and any other committee members that want to be a part. Representative Nierman?
Yeah.
Yep. Representative Marsh?
He actually knows how to turn on a computer. I just complain about him.
In terms of our information security efforts, this slide just gives a summary of the deliverables from HPE. As you see, the last one is due on the 30th of April at the bottom right, and they have delivered on time and on budget with all the work that they have done. And so we have a very clear path forward. Some of it is work that we are accomplishing this biennium. And when I say the work from LFO and CIO that they told us to get in this biennium, some of that was planning work that will be executed over time. And some is work that, of course, never ends. You can't stop your information security efforts. You actually need to always continue them.
Mr. Chair, just one other thing. As I looked around the dais and I realized we have three new members of the legislature, to just cause us all to remember that PERS is not in Salem. PERS's mothership is up in Tigard.
Right.
And so this is not a proximity issue. And in fact, I think the proximity works against trying to jam you into what is arguably a broken data center. You don't have to respond. That's my opinion.
I think you actually talk about the data center in a bit. That's another topic.
Well, but you're going to talk good about it, and I can talk bad about it, and so that's the difference. Anyway, I just wanted to tell people PERS's mothership is in Tigard.
Right. Thank you, Senator Johnson. The point on information security is we need to get better at it. We need a program to stand up to do that. In the budget development cycle, as you can appreciate, that started well before the executive order, actually well before the risk assessment even was completed or the directive came down last April. We had already said we have a policy package, which we'll talk about at the end of my presentation, related to information security. With the intervention of HPE's review, with the intervention of the executive order, with the evolution of things like Senate Bill 90, the ask within that package is evolving. And we ask your forbearance in that we don't have today a real clear ask for you of what it takes to stand up that program. We are working with that constantly with the CIO, with LFO staff, to make and with CFO staff to make sure we come to you with that continued effort. But my assurance to you is that my drive in that is to make sure we stand up the program we need, even should CIO's efforts of centralizing succeed. They are technology efforts that will prevent a technology attack and some training, but they won't fix, for example, whether we have cameras on our building and whether we track intruders into our data center. That is something we can only do locally. That is to say, there's going to be a local component to what we actually ask, and that's where we need to refine our ask down for you. We also provide a timeline just to show you of our cybersecurity program, and I think I've hit the highlights of that. So let's talk now about disaster recovery and business continuity planning. As Senator Johnson alluded to, our headquarters are in Tigard, right off of I-5 at the Haines Street exit. And within our headquarters, we have a data center, which provides the technology infrastructure for the work that we do. Most of our customer service and member service structures are in that headquarter building. So it's crucial to our operations, and it's crucial to the ability for us to provide our services. When you have that sort of centralized or single site operation, you have vulnerability. So we embarked on a number of planning efforts around disaster recovery. Should that single site for some reason become unavailable, what would we do? And then business continuity planning that comes out of that. Those are two different pieces and require two different but complementary plans. So we came to you in 2015 in our budget request with a policy option package related to business continuity and disaster recovery, a request for some $1.5 million, and eventually in 2016, when we went through some more planning and evaluation with this committee, that expenditure was approved, but it was unscheduled. So in other words, you said we could spend the money, but you said we could only spend it if we got CFO, LFO, and CIO to agree on what and how we wanted to spend it. We have been struggling to do so ever since. We finally got $600,000 released for scheduling at the end of March. And so now that leaves us with only the last few months of this biennium in which to spend that $600,000, which is not the complete $1.5 million. So we'll talk more about where that leads us in terms of our ask, but we have been incomplete in our ability to execute on our planning and building out of our disaster recovery and business continuity work. You see there's this timeline again for our disaster recovery strategy and our business continuity strategy. They stretch over biennia because, again, these efforts must stretch over biennia. We still sit though, with a single place where our work is done that faces outward to our membership, and that is a concern that we continue to try to resolve. So,
Representative Marsh.
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair. Could you, in a succinct way, describe the intersection of CFO, LFO, and the Chief Information Officer in terms of which pieces of this conversation that each one holds?
No. I'm sorry, Co-Chair Manning, Representative Marsh. It moves around, and it has been a struggle for us and a frustration for us to really tease that apart. The discussion has proceeded along several lines with several of the members of that group. So, for example, I think we came to the legislature. Mr. Cummings has been our LFO analyst, technology analyst on this matter, and we had to prove to Mr. Cummings that we had a plan to proceed and that the money we wanted to spend was appropriate to spend. So that took some work on our part, and Bob was very patient in us in trying to coalesce around that. Then when it goes into a conversation with CIO, we get into issues like, well, where are you going to have this backup site? Shouldn't you use the data center? How are you going to use the data center? Well, should you use the data center here in Salem or the backup site for the data center, or maybe you should go to the cloud? And in the swirl of all of that, in relation to our small issues, are all of the other operational concerns and executive orders and directives that pulls CIO in all these different directions. So it's a struggle to try to get alignment among those three parties when they all have different priorities and they all have different approaches to the resolution of the issues that they have.
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, it's important to remember that these particular information technology packages went through the Information Management and Technology Committee. Specific recommendations came out. They also came through this subcommittee with specific recommendations. So the scheduling and unscheduling of funds is based upon some very specific criteria. In LFO's mind, that criteria was only partially met on some of these. So that held back some of the money. But I think the bottom line is there's some continuity of planning in spending money with all of the things you're hearing, security, modernization, other things that was maybe unclear to at least LFO and likely CFO, because we wanted to see were the security issues first resolved, did they make sense, and were those issues resolved before they undertook other major information technology initiatives. And so some of those are still remained unanswered questions. So there's some other complexity here, but I just wanted to kind of eliminate the thought that there's a significant degree of discretion on this scheduling and unscheduling, because we took the recommendations of those this subcommittee and the other committee and evaluated PERS progress against those when making scheduling decisions. So thank you, Mr.
Co-Chair. So one of the issues that gets caught up in this, and one of the things that that LFO staff asked us to suggest was the data center migration. So we have gone through at PERS already a major system upgrade. We went through that starting in 2003 when this legislature created a new program for us, two new programs for us to administer, and also gave us broad authority to move quickly into the technology solutions that we needed to implement those new systems. At that time, State Data Center was under development, and we were faced with the conundrum of, do we build out our information technology capacity within the data center in the context of that program, or do we build our own data center to support our activities? And at that time, the State Data Center still being in development, the criticality of our standing up our own program, we created our own data center in Tigard. That data center is robust and has, I can't say state-of-the-art because the state is always evolving and we're a humble state agency, but it has very resilient backups, fire suppression, generators, cooling, organization or structure, all the things that we think are well served to preserve it. The data center folks have toured our facility and appreciate the level of work that we've done to stand it up. I can't remember if Mr. Cummings has actually been down in our basement. I know he's been to our headquarters, but I know he's got some checks he'd like to make and see as far as whether that data center is sufficient. But that point is, that's why we have our own data center in Tigard. At the time we needed to stand one up, Sam couldn't take us. Now we've evolved to today. When we've evolved to today, the data center has its challenges, as Senator Johnson has alluded to. We also have to look at the most effective and efficient way for us to fulfill our technology needs. There are elements, as John alluded to, there are elements of all of these technology pieces that tie together. So if you're talking, for example, about business continuity and disaster recovery, you need to have another technology site somewhere. Why isn't that technology site in the State Data Center? That's probably a great place to put it. We're only talking about a localized outage in Tigard. So if there's a backup in Salem, that's probably a great idea. If there's a business continuity or disaster recovery site in Salem, probably a good idea. Can we get the data center to have the bandwidth and the capacity to take that on? We're in those conversations right now and continue to do with them. That's why you see a policy option 200 that CFO recommended for us to build out a warm site at the data center. That's probably a great place to have it. Down the road, should PERS have its own data center? Should it move into the state data center? Or is there another solution? Representative Meerman, on Tuesday, you were talking about a cloud solution. Is that the appropriate place to go? By the time we're evolved to where we take that next step conversation, who knows what the landscape might look like? I think at PERS, we're different. And by that, I mean we have a fiduciary responsibility to our membership and an accountability to our employers, which is more broad and different than other state agencies. So when we make these decisions, we think in terms of those fiduciary responsibilities and our employer accountability, not just as a state agency who's following a directive. So consequently, when we ask our question about where should we go, we're going to look at all of those options. And the data center may be a great option for us. And if it fits into our strategies and we fit into theirs, that's great. The problem is that those conversations are evolving, and it's hard to nail down, here's where we're at today to move forward with that strategy. So to some degree, giving us a policy package like policy package 200, which CFO submitted to build this warm site in the data center, is a leap of faith to say that this is where we think the agency needs to head, and this is the money they want to spend to renew our disaster recovery and business continuity planning and execution efforts in the next biennium if we were successful in carrying that forward. Is understanding you're putting that into a future environment that is hard to define. And it is really faith that we, as an agency, will be good stewards of that money and make good decisions on it, and always keeping our CFO and LFO partners and CIO partners aligned with our plans going forward. All of that is to say, as far as the data center migration, there are a number of services the data center might be able to provide us. Some services, such as backup, of our current services is something that we're working with the data center right now to provide. Right now, we back up our data system to a tape system and move those tapes off-site. Wouldn't it be better to just download that to the state data center?
It would.
And they can do some of that, but they can't do all of it yet. So backup is one function that we're working on.
Representative Neerman.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you on your presentation. I want to go back to when you were talking about using cloud services for hosting on that. Do you have negotiations? Is cloud one of the options for you?
Co-Chair Manning, Representative Neerman, it's not to the point where we're looking at contracts. It's to the point where we're conceptualizing. So you conceptualize, as I'm going to talk about, when we're ready to make that leap, what are we leaping into? That might be a place we would leap into, or so it would make sense to leap into.
So it's your understanding that cloud is a possibility then still, even though you're not to the point to make that decision then, right?
Co-Chair Manning, Representative Neerman, that's what my IT guys tell me.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So, like I say, we're moving incrementally. So, backup is one service. Warm site is another service in service of POP 200. If we need to have another box somewhere, should it sit in the data center? Should it sit in the data center in Salem or in the data center's backup in Montana? Are there advantages and disadvantages to that? And then a full shift out of a data center in Tigard to integrating into the state data center could also make some sense, but there are intermediate steps that have to happen before we're ready to do that, and that gets into our technology modernization and business modernization discussion that I'm going to get into later. So that's the background and sort of the context of our data center conversation. One policy, so getting into the policy packages that we're moving forward, one is our policy package on IAP administration. This is completing the third phase of our project to bring IAP administration completely in-house. We've requested another $2.7 million in other funds and three full-time equivalent positions to complete this transition. Once this project is done, we turn off the outside administration that's costing us over $2 million a year, so we recoup this investment pretty quickly. Just to illustrate what this IAP administration does, I'm sorry, Senator Johnson, I know you've seen this slide a number of times, but I just like the illustration of this. This is what bringing this administration does, if you'll pardon the animation. The red X's are boxes of work that no longer have to happen. So the point is, if you do all of this work in-house, all of these other steps, handoffs, checks, go away. And that's why we're able to bring this administration in-house to do a better job than the third-party administrator that we currently have. The point of this slide is, once this project is completed, the red boxes all go away, and all that is left is the work that we at PERS have to do to administer the IAP. So here's just a summary of where we're at with phases. Phase one and two are done. Phase three is in process right now. And with the additional dollars, we'd wrap up phase three and go live January of 2019. So package 103, business modernization. This is the effort we've made or are making to try to bring our systems up to speed. I told you that the agency has already gone through a major system upgrade. We started that in 2003. We completed it in 2011. When we put that package together, bought the system that we have, the technology has evolved so much since then. Let me just talk really at a 30,000-foot level about what our challenge is. So the system that we implemented is based on the architecture from the early 2000s, meaning we have a box, actually several boxes of hardware. We have what's called middleware, which in our case is WebSphere, that talks to an application, which is called jClarity. And it's all in a box, and as long as that box is integrated and tuned, it works fine. The problem with having that box integrated and tuned is you only got one box. So if you want to distribute the demand for that over a number of boxes, you need to change the architecture. If you want to swap out that middleware piece so that your application can talk to some newer boxes, you got to change the architecture. If you want to enhance that application that's floating on top of that, you need to change the architecture. So we are constrained by the fact that we are living with old architecture. And what that constrains us in doing is not really the day-to-day work that we do. It's really in where we can go from here. And that's why we call this business modernization. One of the major challenges that our agency faces philosophically is if you started your career in public service 30 years ago and you stopped your evolution of your technology awareness 10 years ago, you love PERS. We can deal with your dial-up connection. we can deal with paper forms that you have to download, handwrite, and submit to us and notarize. You can make a phone call and get a body to help you over the phone. If you want an app for that, we can't help you. If you want to integrate your planning efforts into what we have and do, we can't help you with that. If you want to know, you want to look on your smartphone because you've submitted your application, you want to see where you're at in process, we can't help you with that. So the challenge we have as an agency is not how do we keep people who are retiring in process. We do a great job of retiring people. We're fantastic at it. The problem is, if you started your career today or 5 years ago, one thing you have to realize is it's not your father's PERS. You will not get the benefit of the person that you replaced in public service. There is a lot you individually have to take responsibility for in private savings, supplemental savings. if you're going to have a successful retirement. That is a message and a communication that we cannot facilitate right now because we can't speak to people in the ways that they want to be spoken to. We can't integrate with the systems and the applications that they use to be relevant today. We can't be a relevant part of that conversation. So we want to modernize our systems so that we can connect with people throughout their careers, including the people who are just starting their careers now, and be able to tell them what they need to know to be making these decisions. I put this graphic up only because we talk about the smartphone. When JClarity was implemented, those things did not exist. And now they're everything to everybody. So that philosophically is what we're trying to do with this modernization initiative under Package 103 is update the architecture, the things on which our systems sit, and the ability we have to make changes going forward and build an agile technology system. Once we do that, once we build a technology system that can sit anywhere, Representative Nierman, to your point, once we are no longer constrained to the box in our basement, it can sit anywhere. It can sit in the data center on their virtualized servers. It can sit in Montana. It can sit in the cloud. We can't do that right now. So that's why it's an evolutionary thought. Once we get the modernization piece up to speed, then we have the conversation of, well, where's the best place to put this? So that's Package 103. Package 200, I already alluded to. This was added by CFO. To help us work forward in planning and integrating with the data center to address a localized disaster and try to make sure we have a warm site available for us to be able to switch over to should that occur. There's a number then of what we call technical adjustments or has suggested be called technical adjustments to the governor's budget. And one is, of course, this rescheduling of packages 104 and 105 from this biennium. I already alluded to briefly how, because of this unscheduling, the requirements that LFO laid out in their recommendations that we tried to comply with but were then brought into the review of CIO and others, not crossing the mark as well as we need to. There's money left unspent and work left undone that we would ask to be carried over into the next biennium. And the total of that is about $2.2 million that we were not able to, that was approved, but we were not able to sufficiently plan for and execute within this biennium. The technical debt is a way to talk about one way that we refer to all that work that has to be done in to get ready for modernization, basically making sure that the architecture is up to speed and the foundation or fundamentals of the system are able to evolve with our needs. So we've got some cost estimates of what that sort of work has to look like. And so if we could get that $2.2 million basically carried over into the next biennium, these are the things that we would work on to fix that technical debt, cleanup, and system maintenance. And I realize it's a lot of detail and probably more than you want to know, but it's basically to try to get our systems more reliable and up to speed.
I really appreciate that you're showing end dates and stuff. So that I understand that carryover is already money that you already have allocated or in your possession right now. So you're just carrying that over. You're not asking for a matching.
That's correct. Okay. Co-Chair Manning. Money that we were approved but was unscheduled and we have then therefore not been able to spend in this current biennium. So that leads us to cybersecurity. And this is where, again, we are somewhat on the horns of a dilemma. We continue to recognize the need for PERS to stand up its own information security program. We also support and understand the governor's directive to centralize information security or aspects of it. The funding for that centralized effort, the staffing for that centralized effort has been in flux. So what the governor's budget did in its technical adjustments, what the governor's budget did in technical adjustments was took two of our operations positions away, And those are two positions that will then go into this centralized cybersecurity effort. Well, those were not information security exclusive. They were people in operations who had some responsibility for information security. In our package, sorry to jump around, but in our package, we asked for three positions to staff our cybersecurity program. So this is where we need to make sure that our ask is in alignment with the CIO's needs and with CFO's direction from the governor's office. If PERS is to give up two people whose focus is information security to support these centralized efforts, those two people should come from package 101, not from the operation supported positions that are currently the ones on the transfer list. How much money then should be left with us to stand up our program versus pass through to the centralized program for the services that they will provide to us in support of information security? Those are the discussions that continue every day among our agencies. And we'll hope to bring those together to a cogent recommendation supported by all the parties when we get around to phase three of our budget. So just quickly on fiscal impacts. As I'm sure you're all aware, there's still some bills in the Full Ways and Means Committee out of Senate Workforce that deal with substantive changes to the PERS program, and they do have fiscal impacts attached to them. I would not purport to suggest that they are the final word on the agency's needs or expenses related to those changes, and we won't know the answer to that until, of course, the final bills come out, and frankly, we won't know the answer to that until well after those bills are actually drafted and put out, and we have some time to develop implementation plans. So while there is a fiscal impact to those bills, the numbers associated with it will likely change, and it is our preview to you that we would come back then at some interim time with actual implementation packages to reflect what the cost of the implementation of those final provisions may be, depending again on what those provisions are. That concludes my presentation.
LFO, did you have something to add? Are there any questions from the committee? No questions? All right. CIO, anything? Nothing? We're good. All right, sir. Thank you very much. We don't have anybody else for public hearing, so this will close the public hearing on SB 5534. Which is public employment retirement systems. And before we adjourn, I'd like to find out from the committee, is there anything else that we are looking for, anything else that we need? If there's nothing, John, when are we going to be back? We're not here tomorrow, so we're here on Monday.
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, you're back for the next 2 weeks with the Department of Revenue. Next week will be compliance for the first two days, tax compliance, followed by Wednesday and Thursday of tax collection and fraud. So it will be a full week. And just as a preliminary heads up, the House may continue to have a few afternoon floor sessions that may result in abridged subcommittee meetings, but that is yet to be determined.
Okay, well, we are. Yes, Senator?
Mr. Chair, could I respectfully ask that at the beginning, this is now the phase two on Department of Revenue, at the beginning, could we have a brief synopsis of where they think they are with the implementation of the new system?
John, could you make sure that they, we want to have that up front so so we can get ahead of the game, and that way we will have some kind of way to gauge or what to expect from them. So will it be okay?
Mr. Borden was going to respond, and I just don't know if I'm jumping the gun here.
Nope.
Mr. Co-Chair and Senator Johnson, the plan is that the agency will integrate throughout their presentation the results of automation in the core system, and then there's one specific day dedicated the following week for their information technology projects. But we can pass along this message for them to kind of give a brief overview right up front,
well,
if you'd like.
I would like that. I certainly am just a member here, not a leader of it. But I would like it in that, gauging by the number of constituent interactions that we're having since the new system, I am coming to the inexorable conclusion that something isn't working. And I would like to dispel that right up front. If things are hunky-dory and I just have a lot of crabby constituents, I'd like to know that. Okay. But there is at least anecdotal information floating around this building that things are not going well. And based on the presentation that we saw from the CIO yesterday and the failure of that phone system, which was not revealed to the legislature until this committee teased it out of their presentation, I'm just eager to know, how are things going? We've spent an enormous amount of money. Because we operate in a committee system, not all of us have seen the results of the DOR new computer. Perhaps Representative Nierman's committee has heard a report. But I'd like to be able to ascertain what the factual status of that system is right up front, as it may color some of the consideration of what it is that they're asking for now in later phases. And if that's out of line, one of the chairs can slap me around out in the hall. But
good idea.
I'm just interested in knowing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. We'll give the agent, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee. Well, the agency might be listening already, but we'll pass along those instructions to them this afternoon.
Good. Anything else for the good of the order? Well, if there's nothing else, and we will adjourn and reconvene on Monday, 1500 hour, 3 o'clock for civilian time. We are adjourned.
Pay attention.
Time. We are adjourned.
Pay attention.
Hour, 3 o'clock for civilian.